Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top 300 comic sales through Diamond to retailers for January 2018. And as always, there's a bunch of caveats of this is what sold into stores, it's not what the readers bought, but from the publisher perspective, it is invoiced sales. And this is based on the actual invoices that the stores got for the month. And the interesting thing this time around, and I'll go ahead and mention it now, is there was a minor mistake on the original cut of the data, and by the time it got corrected, and Diamond was pretty fast on this, but what they do is they tend to send out to the press people the data a little early, so we have time to, I don't know, put our article together. And they haven't always done it, and I really appreciate it that they do, because that gives me some time to actually crunch the numbers versus, okay, it's out, it's been out for 8 hours, I'm now off from my day job, now I get to crunch it, write it, and that was making for a crazy evening. Anyways, I had noticed an anomaly in the data where two copies, or two a variant version of Avengers 678 had gotten listed down further on the list at about, I think, rank 282. And I'm like, well, why is that there at the same price point, but all the rest is up there? So I shoot off a quick email to Diamond, Sunday, not even thinking about it. And it's like, okay, they're not open. They're not going to reply fast. That's fine. Sure enough, Monday morning, early in the morning, they're like, oh yeah, we made a mistake. Here's a revised version. And again, it was early-ish in the morning, by the time I got that. But, I'd already, of course, put my article in for CBR. It had already gone up, and it was really, what it did is it shifted things that were at ranks 33 through 42 up one item, and everything, or actually no, down one item, because it went from 42 to 32 or 33, something like that. Anyways, about a dozen items moved one way and everything else moved up one, which by and large didn't make a ton of difference. It added 4,237 units to the total, and about a little over $16,900, which really only made a big deal if to anybody, and probably not even to them, because they made the money regardless of whether it made the list, to Zenoscope, because that was the highest item they had. So that took Zenoscope from being out of the top 300 to in the top 300, which I don't know if they care about or not, and really I don't know that there's any particular reason they should care about it. It comes down to, are they happy with how their books are selling? But it was interesting because it does kind of show that there are aspects of this reporting system, as with any reporting system, that just, I don't want to say luck of the draw or a simple minor mistake or whatever, can influence how the rankings appear. And I'll be honest, part of why I did not update my article on CBR was not only did that change the total units and the total dollars, but my article, I tend to break down, well, here are all the new titles, and here's a percentage of this in this category or whatever. And it started changing just enough of those numbers that it's like, I don't want to have to go through the whole, you know, re-edit the article and stuff. But I did go ahead and recrunch the numbers and stuff, because it also added another item below that. Because just like in some past months where we've gotten the top 500, that happened again this time. And again, I don't know what is motivating getting the top 500 versus 300, but I'm loving it, so hey, I'm glad it's happening. If we take a look at the breakdown, and this is again the corrected version, so if you're following along with my article, you'll notice in a few places the numbers are a little different in one or two places. Everybody but Zenoscope in the top 300 obviously had the same numbers. DC had 44.63% of the total units for the top 300. Marvel had 39.28% of the total units. And Image came in with 6.98% of the total units, so just under 7%. If we kind of translate that into units, we get 2,681,510 units for DC, 2,360,010 units for Marvel. So there's a 381,500 unit gap between those two in DC's favor. And Image came in with 419,515 units. The number, though, I found most interesting on this was a little further down in the breakdown, and that was the publisher that had 30,681 units, which, hey, you're thinking, well, a lot of publishers in the back section are doing that. And I'm like, well, yeah, this was Dark Horse. This was not a good month for Dark Horse. Matter of fact, I believe it was the worst month they've had during the Final Order era, which goes back to February 2003.
Yeah, Dark Horse... Unfortunately for Dark Horse, it is far and away their worst month. It just is. The most recent month that's been anywhere near it was 2 months ago at 73,000 units.
Which is still twice as good as this month.
Yes, but nowhere near their average in the 200,000 or their high. I mean, this year, their average on like kind of the all-time list. Mm-hmm. Is 206,000. To be fair, in 2017 and January so far of 2018, besides the 30,000 month in January, they had five of the 12 months in 17 under 100,000, with the highest one being at 184,000. So they are clearly nowhere near where they once were. I think a lot of that has to do with Star Wars.
I was about to ask, when exactly did Star Wars switch over to Marvel? I'm trying to remember. They've switched the titles enough. I can't just go look at when the Star Wars title currently running launched. At least I don't think I can. Let me double check. 2015.
November, when Marvel had their highest month at 4,000,002 units.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was guessing. And January 2015 is when the million units for Star Wars was.
Okay, which is weird because Marvel didn't have one of their greatest months that month. But Dark Horse has been trending down. They were in the mid 200,000s before that, and if you look since then, by that month they dropped to 151,000 units, and they've only broken 200,000 units once since then. And they're trending under 100,000 in the last 12 to 15 months more often than not. So losing Star Wars, you know, dropped them from 200,000 to 150, but they've lost another 50,000 on their own since then.
Yeah. And again, like you said, in 2014, they were kind of trailing down as Star Wars was winding up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that we've talked a couple of times of, you know, when that happened, they needed to find something else to kind of fill the void in some way, shape, or form. And really, they haven't. I mean, they've got some strong properties. They've got some really good stuff. But in terms of a good, diverse, strong lineup, they're not doing well.
No. For the year 2017, they averaged 117,000 units in the top 300. For the second half of that year, they averaged 97,000. For the final quarter, they averaged 88,000. Again, 30,000 in January is a huge drop, but they've been headed that way.
Well, and they do have some stuff below the top 300 this time.
Yep.
But we're talking like 21, 22,000 units. So, I mean, they've got more coming in than what we're showing in the top 300. But since we've got the top 300 going back now, what, 15 years-ish, that's a good kind of comparison point for stuff. And again, they've got a lot of properties or whatnot. It's just not something where they've got that anchor property or book or title right now.
Also, there haven't been, seemingly there have, BPRD's kind of gone, Hellboy doesn't put out stuff. Their second kind of strongest property after Star Wars has been very sporadic to not really there much kind of in that same time period.
Yeah, and that's certainly not helping. But, you know, they've got some other long-lasting properties like Usagi Yojimbo and things of that ilk.
Again, which did not have an issue make this list, or, I mean, not in the top 500, so I'm assuming no issue shipped in January.
That's what I'm thinking, too, because I'm trying to think when the first, it was running a little behind. I know stuff shipped in December. I thought an issue shipped in January. Maybe it was at the tail end of December.
Yeah.
I just, I mean, Dark Horse isn't going anywhere. The company's been around the block and been in business for 25 plus years. They've got irons and some other fires beyond just comics. So I'm not trying to suggest that they're going to shut their doors or anything remotely like that. But I am suggesting that a good, strong property heading their way would not be a bad thing for them.
No, and their status as a premier publisher, I think, is one of the things that has to be considered. I mean, IDW basically made their case to become a premier publisher by saying, hey, for the last year, we've consistently beaten Dark Horse. Well, Boom and Dynamite and even Valiant and Archie can start to make those claims. So, again, I don't know if Diamond's answer is to make them all premier publishers or to kind of remove Dark Horse from that position.
I'm not even sure if they can do that. And it wasn't that IDW was doing better so much as they were on par with it. And there was a theoretical, and I don't know if it's a real benchmark or not, but like a 5% kind of a threshold that, you know, if you're getting to that area, it's like, okay. But, I mean, Dark Horse has barely been above that, particularly of late. And this goes back to the distributor wars of the mid-90s, where it all kicked off when Marvel bought Heroes World and said, we're going to self-distribute. And then all the other distributors, of which there were a number at the time, like maybe two dozen, were like, well, that was a third or quarter, or, you know, half our business, depending, you know, how things were. It was a really big deal to them. So they started, you know, particularly once Diamond also started locking in exclusives. It was Diamond, Capital, and a few others. And it was a not good point in the industry because stores were forced to have to split their orders across two distributors at least. And that cut their discounts. It doubled their workload for the ordering, all that kind of a deal. And ultimately, once Diamond got DC, that was kind of the final nail in the coffin, to a degree, in terms of Capital. It's like at that point, Marvel's doing their own thing. DC's over at Diamond. Even if you got everybody else, I mean, we've talked about these numbers time and time again, how that everybody else category, small potatoes compared to the big boys.
Well, a perfect example. Everybody else, other than Marvel and DC, have exactly one item in the top 100 this month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's Walking Dead, to no one's surprise.
Well, but even if you add everybody else up, you're still talking a little over 16% of the total units in the top 300. And that's including Image, Dark Horse, and IDW, and Boom, and Dynamite, and all the others and stuff. So, I mean, your business is kind of decimated at that point.
Yeah, once you take Image and IDW out, you're under 6%, just over 6%, 6.11% of the units. But again, that includes Dark Horse. You know, you take them out, it actually doesn't change much, but...
Yeah.
At least not this month.
But when Diamond got DC, that pretty much marked the de facto end, although it lasted a little longer, for the distributor wars. That's what led to consolidation, shutdowns of all the other ones. And Diamond essentially either bought out or, I'm not sure the exact specifics, but, you know, took over where Capital was. And that's
wasn't that about the time Marvel went bankrupt as well?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember off the top of my head the timing of their bankruptcy versus the Hero World stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it was after, but I could be wrong on that. Again, this was 25 so years ago, thereabouts. Actually closing in on, yeah, at least 20. And I'm getting old, so my memory's gone. But it was, again, ugly time in the industry. It was probably one of the times the direct market was closest to just a collapse. And it was one of those that if things had gone nasty or bad or some such, we wouldn't be here having a podcast talking about this stuff because there wouldn't be anything left to talk about. But again, that's what put Diamond into the position it did was, again, that deal with DC. Because again, everybody else was fighting over, first Kamiko, Eclipse, or I forget what other publishers were around back then. It definitely changed the landscape. But as part of that, other companies signed exclusives with Diamond and certain sweetheart deals, I think, got locked in. This is when we got the front half versus the back half of previews.
Yep.
So even with the Dark Horse selling not so much, it's not like there's a, well, we're bouncing them out into the back half, de facto decision to be made, they may not even have that option.
Yeah.
But I don't know, and I'd much rather see Dark Horse pull through this with some sort of license or big creator-owned property or something. It just seems like that's a tough thing to do these days.
Yeah, and just kind of for the sake of clarity, even if you include trades and go to total market share by units, Dark Horse is still well behind Boom and Dynamite this month. So it's not just, oh, well, you know, they got their trades are doing well, or I'm not saying they're not doing well, but it doesn't really make up that gap that puts them kind of in the front half.
Well, and it's also not like this was a odd month where there was, you know, four shipping weeks, and one of them was like, you know, there are times where, you know, December can have four shipping weeks, but that last one's, you know, kind of between Christmas and New Year's awkwardly, and they don't do a, you know, whatever. It was none of that. This was January, which is not a strong month, admittedly, but there were 5 weeks in it. So it's not like something just missed coming out and it you know, because something could come out the last week of January and the first week of March and just skip over February because of just its schedule.
And again, Dark Horse on the trade side, while the units are so much smaller than on the issue side, it was the fourth biggest publisher on the trade side. But again, total dollars, all that, it couldn't make up what a terrible issue month they had.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. This is something that, again, I think we've seen coming for a while, particularly when they lost Star Wars, of could they replace it and find, you know, more solid footing. And so far they haven't, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Anything else in the breakdown that looked interesting to you?
Not particularly, no. Seems to be more on here than I'm used to.
I think we had enough publishers with just that one or two items that, yeah, there was quite a few. The total this time was just over 6 million. 6,007,826. And on the first cut of the numbers, it was actually a little bit lower. It was 6,003,589. Because again, the one title from Zenoscope getting, bumped up to the top 300.
Yeah.
If we take a look at the top 300, and again, this time the below the radar stuff of what's under the top 300, but I've got data for, goes to 500.
Okay.
There were some interesting peculiarities this time in the list. Not radically unusual or uncalled for, but it's one of those that really, when somebody looks at the top of the list, says, well, you know, we had some bestsellers, we must be doing well. Well, Doomsday Clock came in at the top item. It had 157,714 units, off almost 8.3% from the previous issue. That, of course, being an event over at DC with now going, what, bi-monthly, I believe?
About that.
And then the item behind it in second place was Dark Knight's Metal, number 5, 149,076 units. That's off a little over 5%. This one is 3 weeks late. There was a 6 week gap between it and the previous issue. This too, I think the next one's having a delay. DC's starting to have some definite struggles, I think, in that area. But these are the only two items over the 100,000 mark. And they were, I mean, Dark Knight's Metal was almost at the 150,000 mark. And of course, Doomsday Clock was above it by 7,000 plus units.
Yeah.
But having event titles doing over 100,000, not surprising. Two from the same publisher, kind of unusual. A January that otherwise would have had nothing over the 100,000 mark, not too good. Batman is still not far below that 100,000 mark.
It's been 5 to 8 issues. Batman seems to be settling in more around 95, 96,000 than over 100 these days.
Yeah, and there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of or whatever about that. I think that's good numbers. It was a little more impressive when it was over the 100,000 mark for multiple years in a row.
Yep.
But it's still head and shoulders above everything else in terms of the best-selling ongoing title.
Yeah, and the next one, is there a cover thing here or something else happening?
With Walking Dead 175 selling 82,361 units.
Which is up over 20,000 units from its last few.
Yeah, this jumped by like 35%+, and I am not sure why.
Okay.
And I looked for variant covers. I looked for just about anything I could think of and came up short.
175 is almost a...
You could argue an anniversary number, a round number, magic number kind of a thing.
Here's the other thing. Was it in color or something? I'm trying to remember.
No.
Because it also went up to $399.
I think this was the first one. No, actually, I'm trying to remember. When did they switch the price point on this?
Not the, well, the last one.
This
was
one. This was when they switched the price point. So okay. Going up a dollar got him 20,000 units, you could argue. It's not true, but it coincides.
Okay.
It's not the first issue of a story arc. It's not in color. It's not, hey, let's celebrate 175 issues. It was somebody listening, no doubt, is saying, oh, but it's this.
Yes.
I just, when I was doing my article, I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
But I was reassured when I went to the next item below it, and I'm like, well, this one popped up quite a bit. It was up 140%, a little over. Can I explain this one? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I can. This is one where the number of...
And we talked about this, because we had some insight into this. You were just explaining what happened.
Not on this one.
Wasn't it that this one?
This is Avengers 675. It was Avengers 678.
Got it. Fair enough. Sorry.
This is one of those where they had a variant after variant after variant on this thing. And... they had, I mean, this is when it first shifted to going, weekly.
Yep.
So they had, five, issues that came out this time around. So if you look on the month to month thing, it just skyrockets. But, the first of these had, let's see, 1 in 25, 1 in 100, 1 in 200, a meter exceed, covers, you know, with thresholds from, you know, 100% to 150% of a previous item. And it's just the crazy number of variant covers was just insane. I think there were like 10.
Well, and here's the thing. It went up from 33,000 the previous issue to this number near 80,000, and came back down to around 40,000 right afterwards. So it kind of kept a bit of its increase on that issue, but certainly not all of it.
Well, and I think the part that got the increase was, hey, we're starting off a weekly storyline. It'll have better story momentum, etc.
Yeah. And you know, the last issue actually went up the most of all of them. So, again, I'm sure that one probably had a bunch of variants too, but...
Well, and again, there was one particular variant that was down at rank 282 for Avengers 678.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things that with Marvel throwing so much promotional effort at some of these issues, they do really well, and people say, oh, well, you know, it's doing successful or whatever, you know, they think of it, but they don't always look that the second issue, you know, right after it, it drops like a stone. And it makes the initial issue of these Marvel volumes meaningless as far as any sort of indication of sales. Because, yeah, 675 was up 140%, but then, you know, 676 was down 51%. So, Marvel seems to be focusing again more on selling the cover than the contents, and pushing the individual, you know, specific issue than trying to get people on board for the run.
But as we've talked about, I mean, there's an argument to be made that I realize from a reader perspective it's different. But from a business perspective for Marvel, it's kind of a who cares.
I would argue that money is money, certainly. I agree
exactly.
With that. However, I think they should care, because if they're going to throw this kind of promotional effort at something, they should be doing it. And again, this was a good pick for doing it. Because it was a new story arc, it's going weekly, and if people tried it and liked it, they'd get another four issues that month, etc. Now, the odds of them, somebody who hasn't been reading the book deciding, you know what, I'm going to go and I'm going to pick up another three issues at, what, $3.99 a pop, you know, one every week. That's a little bit of a hard sell, but okay. So sometimes when they do it, they're throwing the promotion behind the right kind of a book that stands a chance of getting readers that stick with the title. But what we typically see is you've got the spike. It goes right back to where the trend line was. Maybe it's up a little, but usually not so much. And I think they're better off finding a way to get readers actually engaged with the content versus slapping a particular cover on it.
Yeah.
But I also fully concede slapping a cover on it can be a very successful strategy. One of the titles that best exemplified that this month was Supergirl. If we go down to, where is that one? Rank, see reorder activity, rank 123.
78.
78, thank you. Too many items on this. This is a title that started doing better as of issue, what issue was that?
Started doing better is relative.
17. Actually, hang on, no. 12 is when it started doing better. This is when they started doing open-to-order Art Gem covers.
Yes, and now it's kind of back to where it was.
And it's one of those things that by putting these variant, or alternate, not variant, because they're not, you know, incentive things. You could just, they want more, they want to order whatever they want to order, they can order it. There was a demand for that particular artist's cover. They seem to be doing pretty well. And is it Art Gem or Art Germ?
I
don't know.
I'm unfamiliar.
It's one of those things that this, again, this particular artist, just like Alex Ross for a while, when you'd put his cover on something, it would do better. Or when they would do the Marvel Zombie stuff. So you can goose the numbers successfully this way, but the question is, does that get you more readers or just more cash that month? If you can spend the promotional money getting more readers, you get a much better and longer return on that investment.
Again, I just, arguably paying whatever artist is popular, his page rate for a cover or whatever, his cover rate his or cover, whatever yeah. it is probably a lot cheaper than any, the return in investment there probably has to be one of the best out there.
Well, it's certainly easy to do the math. I'm going to pay X for this additional cover. I think it'll bring in Y sales at Z price, so I'm going to make so much money.
Yes, and as opposed to that, how many, you know.
Yeah, if that's more than what it's costing to do the cover, you win.
Yeah. Well, not just that. You always say, well, they put more effort in getting more and then if the argument is make it something to get more, then you're getting into real promotion. Ads.
Heaven forbid.
No, I understand. But the point is, I don't know what the cover rate for these guys is, but I'm assuming it's less than a couple of $1,000, for instance.
I'm certainly not suggesting that these variant covers are not profitable. They most certainly are. That's why we're seeing them so often.
Exactly.
I just don't think they're effective in terms of gaining readers long term.
I don't disagree. But if you've got a promotional budget of, let's say, $10,000, and you can get a variant cover for $2,000, and you can get that kind of sales out of five variant covers, that is so much more than you can do with $10,000 in any other marketing style of marketing.
I agree with that, and I'm certainly not suggesting they go spend the money on like a radio ad or TV ad or anything of the sort.
Exactly. That's kind of my point.
But
so,
my contention here is they're not doing it on five books. They're doing it on like 50 at Marvel and DC. More Marvel than at DC.
Okay, even if it's on 50, and again, just for argument's sake, could be way high, could be way low, I don't know. Let's say that extra cover costs them $2,000. On 50 books, it's $100,000. I don't know what you could do more effectively to sell that many more books with that same $100,000.
It seems like for $100,000, you could maybe get some better training or whatever for your editors to where they can help get better stories that are more engaging with the readers and they can get better work out of their creators and such that you don't need the variant covers to kind of almost, I don't say trick somebody into buying it, but to buy it for the cover, not the content. Because the sale of the cover, that lasts as long as you have that cover.
Yes.
If you actually beef up the story content or and that's a subjective term, but if you make it more marketable to where readers who try it stick around,
okay,
that seems like a better investment. I'm not saying it's easy, and certainly
I'm not even suggesting it's not easy. I'm suggesting it might not be possible.
You know, on the one hand, I think there's plenty of strong evidence with all the red numbers we're seeing as negatives in the delta column of issue-to-issue sales that supports your theory that it may not be possible. But then we start seeing things like Walking Dead and a few other titles here and there that actually have decent trend lines.
Yes. No. Okay. But and as we've talked about with The Walking Dead multiple times, Mr. Kirkman caught lightning in a bottle. He doesn't know how to replicate it. So if I'm at in the editorial office in D.C., what do I say to replicate that? And how many years did it take not making that additional profit to get there?
There's can you replicate it, and is it doable? If you don't know that it's doable, it's much harder to kind of make it happen. Once it's doable, it becomes possible to replicate it. Not easy, not trivial.
I'm not even saying it's not possible to do it. It is, but I don't know of an idea that an editorial staff could have that could A, duplicate it predictably and consistently and confidently like a variant.
I see where you're coming from. I'm not suggesting there's anything editorial could do that would have the same sort of remotely guaranteed impact that a variant cover would. Okay. Not going to happen. However, if they could be pushing for tighter stories, more return on the investment from a reader perspective, more kind of things happening in an issue. Because, I mean, we've all read a comic where you get to the end, I'm like, well, that was fast. There wasn't much there. And we've also read some that are, wow, there's a ton of content in this issue. And they're the same length of 20 pages sometimes.
I agree with that. But this goes back to something I've always kind of asserted. I tend to agree with you. I would like more single issues. But those books we're talking about, like Walking Dead, don't have that.
I'm not saying done in one.
I'm
suggesting that you've got enough story content that there's some serious story momentum coming out of that issue to get you to that next issue.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to say let's go back to where everything was a done in one and you could read them in any order and kind of almost the golden age sort of storytelling.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is when you've got issues that it feels like they're just marking time to fill 20 pages to get to the next, that's a problem. And that if you could coach the editors and the creators and stuff to where people, it's like, gosh, I'm engaged with this story. I've got to know what happens next. And it's only, so far away time-wise and money-wise. I can do that. Let me go get that. Versus down at rank 56, Marvel 2-in-1 number 2, Drew and I reviewed that. And the status quo for the characters at the beginning of the issue and the end of the issue was not radically different. They were still just about to go find Reed and Sue or go explore or whatever. They had one more piece to the puzzle, but they hadn't really left on the adventure that we were kind of teased was going to start at the end of the first issue.
I don't disagree with any of that. I've not seen it successfully sell a book either, I guess is my point. And even in the ones where we were calling successes, for the sake of argument, let's pick whatever you think are successes. How long did they take to become a success? And how much did they increase? Is a 0.25% increase every month for 10 years enough to make it profitable that the guy who has that idea still has his job after the 10 years, as opposed to the guy who can just come in and say, hey, I'm going to spend $2,000 on a new cover and I got a 30% increase this month?
I would argue if you had somebody as an editor that could get you a 0.25% increase damn near every time.
Okay.
They would be worth their weight in gold because you do know what would happen. Off that steady sales, steady slightly increasing sales, modestly increasing, but still steadily increasing, they'd still go slap the cover on it, and they'd get a better return on the investment. The problem is the return on the investment of the cover is now mitigating loss. I mean, when we look at these numbers and talk about them and stuff, I mean, again, that Marvel 2-in-1, it was down nearly 37,000 units, 53% from the first issue. So, and that's with covers on it. Not as many as the first issue, of course, because, well, it's not a first issue. But when you've got a standard sales trend that looks kind of sort of like a slide at a playground, except it just goes out further at the bottom, you've got that sharp drop at the beginning. It then kind of angles off and glides slowly down there if you're lucky. The problem is, not the problem, but the tactic that gets used is they'll slap variant covers on it to get these artificial spikes to stem the loss, but they're not actually curing the problem. They're just patching over it.
Yeah.
And if I had an editor that said, if we'll take those, whatever the book initially sells and, it may have a little warm-in period for the honeymoon or whatever, but after the fourth, fifth issue, from there, guarantee a 0.25% increase, I'd be thinking, hey, you've guaranteed me I'm pretty much not going to lose anything from issue to issue. That means I've got a stability in sales both for the publisher. From the retailer perspective, that means people who try it are going to stick with it. So it's worth getting people onto that book versus people seem to be jumping on and off titles a lot these days. And there's nothing to drive people to any particular book. If you look at the X franchise, there is no flagship title. Again, Drew and I talked about this when we were talking about X-Men Red, but X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, Uncanny X-Men, and Weapon X are all selling roughly the same. And one of them used to be that you would have a flagship title for a franchise. It was doing X amount, and then the other books were doing, you know, half or a third or two-thirds that, whatever. But head and shoulder difference, you could pick, well, that's the flagship book. It's selling so much better. There's not really that kind of difference these days in many of the franchises. Superman in Action, there's 6,000 unit difference. Not that big of a deal. You know, even Batman and Detective, yeah, bigger deal, but Detective's also not a Batman title the way it used to be. What's another good franchise that's got multiple?
Here's all of that is, none of that affects the bottom line kind of quick enough.
If you're looking for a quick fix, variant covers are the way to go. No argument about it. The problem is a quick fix isn't necessarily a permanent fix, and it rarely in this case ever is. So when you look at almost any sales chart, I would pull up when I'm working on one of my articles. So how's this title doing?
Sure.
I usually have the, oh crap, here's the 2 to 6, you know, spikes I've got to, oh well, was this a variant? Was this an event? Was this a new creative team or whatever? And sometimes looking at the spike, I've got a pretty good guess as to which it is.
Okay.
But then otherwise, it's always gliding down to the right, you know, and sometimes more substantially than other titles. Because nobody has the ability, it seems like, Walking Dead being the notable exception, to have as many readers roughly at the end of a story as you had at the beginning. It just seems like you're playing a game of attrition, and it becomes a churn-based model where you've got to keep getting new people on to make up for the fact that you can't keep people. Repeat business. This is a habitual buying pattern. This is a hobby. It's a storytelling venue.
I don't disagree with you. But what I can tell you is, if you have a book that sells 1,000 units a month, and you get your 0.25% increase a month, okay, and it's consistently a quarter, so the first month's 0.25%, the next month's 0.25% on that, the next month's 0.25% on that, the next month's 0.25% on that, at the end of the first year, you've sold 12,309 issues.
Yeah, you haven't gone up much.
If you spend the money to put two variant covers and you get a 5% increase, which doesn't seem unreasonable, in that same 12-month period, you've sold over 14,000 issues.
Okay.
So again,
which title's more likely to be around on that 13th month?
Doesn't matter.
I would argue it does. I would argue there's a spin-up cost to any new title.
Okay.
Negotiating with the creative team, getting them on board, getting the logo done, getting, you know, whatever that cost is.
But if you're just recycling the same titles over and over again, renumbering, renaming Batman.
Fair enough. You're not doing a new logo.
You don't have any of that stuff.
You've still got a little bit to negotiate with the new creative team.
Assuming you don't just move your contract over.
Fair enough. Maybe you do. But on a lot of these things, you know, there are certain titles, Superman, Batman, X-Men, Spider-Man, they're going to happen forever.
As we've talked about, there are no new characters to big two. So arguably, you've got 30 of them, let's say you got 50 of them. You pick 35 of them to publish every month. So there isn't really that creation cost to switch out 15 of them. There never is.
I don't think it's zero.
I realize as a reader, it's a terrible thing. I'm just, as a pure accountant, trying to figure out how I make my quarter look better, how I make my year look better, whatever.
No, and I get where you're coming from a strictly dollars and cents, and this is a business to them, and that's how they've got to look at it. I just think that if you have something that would the accountant not like predictable versus volatile?
The question is, since it's so unduplicatable, even by the few people who've managed to do it, I would argue the variant cover is more predictable than this mythical Beto storytelling.
Fair enough. I see where you're coming from, and certainly referring to it as mythical is fair, because it is not, I mean, comics have been around for decades and decades and decades, and it is highly anomalous for things to remain stable in sales, much less go up. So I'm not, again, trying to suggest that this is easily ascertained or doable or trivial, but it seems like the investment in trying to make that happen would pay off in spades.
That's assuming it works, and the fact that in decades we can point to one or two of them tells me the chance of success is so small.
All right. Well,
it's a money loser.
Let's talk about one other aspect of history then that I think factors in.
Sure.
Do you remember one of the other things that happened a couple of years before the distributor wars?
Which one?
The pretty much the collapse of collectability in the early 90s.
Absolutely.
Now, right now, a lot of these numbers are where they're at because of those 1 in 100, the 1 in 25s, the
yep.
order this to get that stuff.
Yep, yep.
And your whole argument that it is a predictable, reliable, money-making thing.
Until it isn't.
Until Absolutely. It isn't.
Until it isn't. No arguments. And that could happen at any moment, and arguably, it had its best chance to do that in the last decade. In the last 12 years with some of the things we saw in the economy, and particularly around a decade ago. But it didn't. So what could cause that? I don't have the answer to.
I can tell you one of the things that could definitely cause it.
What?
One of the other things that happened in the past. Let's go specifically towards 2011.
Okay.
At the beginning of the year, if you had wanted to get all of your comics digitally, you could not. Digital yes. comics existed.
Okay.
By the end of that year, pretty much if you wanted to get all your comics digitally, maybe you couldn't get 100% of them. You could at least get 80, 90%. Now you can pretty much
absolutely.
Get them all.
Okay.
On the digital market, do you think collectability has the same selling power that it does in print?
No, but that's what I find interesting. I think the collectability market's gone up since then.
Okay.
There's inflated scarcity.
True.
If there's 100,000 people reading and half of them read digitally, you've only got 50,000 copies of each issue now, which makes them inherently scarcer, which makes them inherently more collectible.
If you've got 50,000 also reading it digitally, which the numbers don't seem to suggest. But I get what you're saying. There's more interest in the comic than there is comic.
Yes.
So I'll grant that. But it just seems like if your publishing model is based on doing the easy thing of slapping a variant cover on it to goose the sales to keep the book around a little longer, that isn't transferable into the digital age.
I don't disagree in the least. The argument, and this is where it gets interesting, are the major comic publishers, and to be fair, even the minor ones at this point, in the publishing business, or are they in the manufactured collectibles business?
Or the intellectual property business. And I think you could argue any of the three, and probably a fourth or fifth as well.
And the point is, if they're in the intellectual property and manufactured collectibles business, they're not really in the publishing business anymore, which means you try to produce the IP, you either do or you don't. It has a success or failure rate. And you try to produce the manufactured collectible, and you're not really in the business of growing an individual title's numbers month over month, because that's not even the business you're in.
Let me ask this question then. If they are in that business,
okay.
should we not be seeing a little bit more focus on like DC Direct and or a Marvel equivalent of that? Things that are explicitly collectible items.
But those things do exist, do they not?
They exist.
Okay.
The question wasn't do they exist, but should we not see more of a focus on them? It's been a while.
The question is what I would argue one could argue we are. They don't call it DC Direct or whatever because it's not working in the statue business. They call it a variant cover because it works in the printed poster business essentially.
Fair point, but my contention is if you argue that their model is that of collectibilities and that's their either area of expertise or the business they think they're in.
Okay.
Why is it only taking the form of variant covers, whereas it's, at least from my buying habits, while DC Direct is still coming out with a ton of stuff, it's been a while before there was, I was thinking there's, you know, I gotta have that. You know, there, and this is in a time where DC has a plethora of TV shows they could be doing trinkets and collectible things based on, in addition to the various stuff in the comics. This is not a time where there is a dearth of material to, you know, put into plastic and sell at a markup.
Because ultimately, the comic book pamphlet is the business, whether or not you argue they're in the publishing business, is the manufacturing business they know the best. The same reason Topps still makes baseball cards, and that business has changed, and they're not sold in the corner grocery store. Baseball fans and kids don't buy them to read stats. They're bought by a weird group of collectors. Why does Topps still make baseball cards? Because ultimately, that's the type of collectible they know how to make. And ultimately, comic publishers, the type of collectible they know how to make, are comic books.
I see counter examples to that in a few places.
Okay.
Target McFarlane Productions is a good example.
Yeah, he got into the toy business, and he doesn't really make that many books anymore.
And he's doing well there. Matter of fact, I think there's some Star Trek figures coming out that look interesting.
Absolutely, and he made that shift.
I would also argue that Marvel, I forget if they bought out or were bought out by Toy Wiz or Hasbro, you know, they've got enough, or at least at one point in their corporate conglomerate, expertise in the toy area, they could have and should have made a better go with that.
Well, Disney, in theory, is their big, you know, Disney owns Marvel. There's a huge, Marvel's never been owned by Hasbro.
They had a deal with Hasbro. I think it came in during the bankruptcy. Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Okay, maybe that's possible. And to be fair, Hasbro still makes, and now Hasbro's bought Mattel, and we can get into that whole different discussion. They have a bunch of licensing deals and do produce a bunch of Marvel toys.
Yeah. It just seems like if they're going full-on collectible, they could be doing even that business approach better. And I'm not sure that that's really what they're going. I think it's a matter of, they need to print so many comics, they need to sell so many comics, and like you said, if for so many dollars I can get a cover and I can make, you know, double that investment or whatever, why not?
Yep, exactly.
It just seems that they've gone to the well so many times, it's gotten less and less effective.
I know that, and I agree with it, and is it going to be cyclical, and will there be some kind of crash in that market? Probably, and here's the thing, could it be next week? Yes. Could it be in 10 years? Yes. And until that day comes, it's very hard to predict.
When I was first doing the podcasting on this stuff, I was able to chase down that the Marvel Zombie variant covers added 5,000 to 7,000 units to the comics they were put on.
Okay.
Now, obviously, they cost far less to produce. Even if they cost that 1,000, 2,000, clearly Marvel was making money on them.
Okay.
But if we look at this list, there are a lot of comics that if you subtract 5,000 or 7,000 units on, they're in negative numbers.
Yes.
Even Marvel and DC books.
But you just talked about that Supergirl issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of jump after number 12 with that particular artist variant. On average, that increased sales by about 6,000 units a month for those 3 months.
Agreed. It's effective, but it comes down to until it isn't.
Well, and yeah, but I mean, it's the same 6,000 increase you were talking about when you started.
I just question how well the industry could survive that if it is a bubble, if it bursts.
Yeah, well, and that, again, is a whole different issue and much harder to argue when you're trying to sell. Like you said, we got to sell this many books this month. If, you know, hey, variant cover gets that done this month, it's a lot easier to sell that to everyone in the company than it is to, well, we do this, we might slowly grow towards that number.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll still have our jobs by the time it builds up to whatever we're hoping to build to.
You're going on the theory that it's got to build up. I'm working on the theory that it has to not break down. Most titles sell at a certain number, even if that number is half what they would currently sell out with the variant covers.
Yep.
If you could maintain roughly that, I think you're still ahead on most titles. Matter of fact, I'd say you're still ahead on almost every title.
You think if everything sold half of what it sells right now?
No. If the first issue sold half of what it sells now at Marvel with the promotional push of the variant covers.
Okay.
In other words, if it starts lower but stays there.
Okay.
In other words, it quickly gets past that 50% loss and keeps dropping. And the fact that you can never stem that loss is where I think the problem is.
Okay.
If you look at a lot of number twos, again, particularly over at Marvel, because they go so hog wild on the variants, you get some sharp drops. At DC, they don't go hog wild on the variants, but their number ones also don't sell as well. The number twos don't drop as much.
Well, and there aren't as many of them. That's the other thing, to be fair. They don't, and so, let me just look at Marvel number twos we have. Okay. So we have Marvel 2-in-1 number 2 at 32,000, rank 56. It dropped 53%. So it went from 70,000 basically to 32,000 basically. We have Phoenix Resurrection, Return of Jean Grey number 2, went from 145 to 51,000. I think we figured the average lifespan of a Marvel book a few years ago was about 10 issues.
Thereabouts, depending, yeah.
Okay. So, if you sell 10 issues, and if your argument is its natural level, let's go to 2-in-1, would be 25,000. 25,000 times 10 issues.
Actually, I was saying half the first issue, which would be 35,000.
Yes, but your argument would it would stay there.
Yes.
My argument is that we don't really get to a semi-stable point till issue 4 or 5, which by this point is 25% of that first issue.
Okay, fair enough.
So let's assume the stable point for 2-in-1 is 25,000. I'm even going to give you the benefit of the doubt and go a little higher. We'll call it 25,000. 25,000 times 10, 250,000. 70,000 plus 30,000, you've already sold over 100,000 in the first two issues.
Mm-hmm.
You only have to average less than 20,000 an issue for the last 8 to meet the same total sales for the lifetime of the title.
But that's the fallacy. The lifetime of the title is based on the current sales trends.
Yes.
If it levels off at 25,000, it doesn't last 10 issues. It lasts longer.
Absolutely.
And that's where
you've given up the 70 and the 32,000 sales issues.
I never once said that you don't continue to have variant covers. I'm saying that's not what you want to have as the way to get sales. Okay. In other words, you can do a bump on it, and certainly a first issue. I get wanting to do the special covers. The problem is, if that's your only sales tactic, it doesn't work. And we've seen other sales tactics where the numbers have just been drained out of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A good example is first issues. That used to be pretty much, oh, wow, it's a first issue from somebody. It'll do pretty well.
Yeah.
We've got first issues of various titles, particularly one that's gotten a pretty good promotional push, too. They got a promotional push from DC, is the New Age of Heroes. At rank 44, we've got Damage number 1 at 37,001 units. And at rank 65, Silencer number 1 at 30,131 units. These are not strong sales. Now, they're also not Marvel titles. Granted, I've only read Damage. I haven't read Silencer yet, but Damage seemed pretty much like a Hulk title, but you didn't have the variant covers and all that stuff, so it's not like it's going to plummet next issue. But it's also unlikely to ever get above these initial numbers for either of these titles.
No argument. There are 52... Oh, no, I went too far, sorry. Let's only look at the top 300, because that's what we do. There are 37 issues that are listed as issue number 1 on this list. That is for this month.
You filtered out the reorder, I take it?
Yes, I took out the reorder.
Okay, that's fair.
There's 37. Yeah,
just getting mine to the same list.
Absolutely. I think I collected comic books for 15 years before I had 37 issue number 1s.
Certainly when I started reading comics, a number 1 was a really big deal.
And again, really rare.
I remember when Superman Presents the Krypton Chronicles came out. Yep. And on the cover, they had to explain it's a miniseries, it's only 3 issues, it'll end after that.
Yep.
This is why it's a number 1. I remember when the original Legends of the Dark Knight came out. It was the first new Batman title in pretty much, well, I guess since Batman and the Outsiders. But it was the first new solo Batman title since either Detective or Batman. You know, whereas these days, it's Wednesday, there's probably a new number 1 Batman on something.
Yeah.
It's totally different ball game. And again, it's that overuse that's drained the sales juice out of it, just like I feel variant covers are overused.
Yeah, no, and I'm not really disagreeing with you. I'm just making the argument, if I own the business or I gotta, you know, meet a number or any of those kind of things, I'm not sure there's a better idea out there.
If I were running a comic publisher, I am certainly not going to suggest I would not do variant covers. I absolutely would. And I've got a couple of different strategies that I think would be cool approaches to it.
Sure.
But I would not be reliant on that to meet the payroll.
But again, you're talking smaller company. You're talking a whole different thing.
I would say even if I were to somehow magically be in charge over at Marvel and DC,
no,
I would want to lower the reliance on them.
No. Because if you're over at Marvel or DC, now you're in a big job at a big corporation. And once a month or whatever, you get on a conference call with the CFO and he says, why aren't your numbers up? And he doesn't want to hear about
it. Depends on the CFO.
Comic book thing.
It depends on the CFO, because certainly they're not going to want the numbers down, but they're also not going to want them bouncing all over the place.
Well, which is why we always talk about when we look at the monthly breakdown for all these things, covers, yada, yada. And yes, they're down. And they've been particularly down the last month or two, and we have seen some big turnover at Marvel because of it. But you look at, again, the calendar year 2017. Marvel, in the 12 months, averaged 2.8 million units, okay?
Okay.
The biggest number in there was just over 3 million. The lowest was 2.3. It was very consistent. So this idea that they're bouncing all over the place, again, CFO says, how are your sales this month? I did about 3 million units. Good. You know what I mean?
All right, let's take another roughly 12-month period.
Sure.
Where Marvel went from 4.2 million
yep.
to 2.4 million.
So you're talking October to October 15 to 16, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's take a look. Average is 3.5. There's 3.4, 3.5, 2.9, 4.2. You break them down by quarters. 4.2, 3.7, 3.4. The average is 3.8. The next quarter, the average goes down. It's 3.0. The next quarter, it goes back to 3.5. The next three-month period. So basically, you got four quarters where you average around 3.2 million units.
At that point, it starts to come down to how good is the cash flow and the strength of the company, and can
exactly.
it absorb that kind of a stuff. But I think
we're not
if
talking wild swings like the titles we're talking about are, though.
I would still argue from a 1 month being 4.2 million, and a year later you're down at 2.4 million for a month.
But again, you factor in the month before and after both of those months, it's you're around 3.2 million. For the average of the quarter.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I think there are some CFOs out there that would like a lot more predictability.
Oh, sure.
Then it evens out in the wash, hopefully.
Well, but that's my point. I when you go through these quarter by quarter and you get these real consistent, you know, 3 month averages or 6 month averages or 12 month averages, that is predictable to someone looking at it that way. As opposed to me and you who are looking at, well, they had, you know, Avengers sold, you know, 300,000 issues this month, and they sold 40,000 the next. That's not nearly as predictable when we're breaking it down to the level we are. Whereas, again, if you're kind of an accountant for the company, how'd you do? Yeah, we sold about 3.2 million issues this month. That's much more predictable, even though it doesn't look like it on the level we're talking about.
I mean, at that point, you've got to factor in how many issues did you do it over, how many people did you have involved, what was the payroll, all that kind of a stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just seems that if you can hang on to your readers, you're better off.
Again, if you're in the publishing business, and particularly if you're in the one title publishing.
Let me rephrase that. If you can get your customers to be regular, loyal, returning customers, you're better off. Repeat business is good because you can build on repeat business.
I tend to agree with you, but as we've discussed before, I don't think the base of comic readers is particularly growing or shrinking. It's the same group of people buying approximately the same number of titles. And like you said, they're as schizophrenic as these lists. They're hopping from one thing to the other. And all you got to do is, if the average person, you know, buys 30 comics and 10 of them are yours, you just keep hoping you can get that person to buy 10 comics from you every month. And it doesn't matter if it's a number one of this, a number 20 of that, a Spider-Man, a
right.
Iron Man, whatever.
But if you can, once you've gotten them to buy one of yours, get a lock on their list there for a while, that means you can focus on the other 9 slots. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And I would argue for a lot of people, and I've made this argument. I think part of the schizophrenia that we see in lists even is created by that other competition, sometimes from the same publisher, sometimes from a different.
Yeah.
Again, I buy, you know, I don't pre-order. I don't religiously listen. Fair enough. I will admit that. I occasionally listen to the preview spotlight. 95% of the things I hear spotlighted are first issues.
Well, certainly, you want to do a jumping on point. It's hard to convince somebody to get onto a book in the middle of an arc.
No argument. But my point is, every one of those makes you go, ooh, I want to check that out. And if I'm going to buy the same number of titles, that means something else has to drop off. And so the schizophrenia of the business and all the publishers and all the number ones being published, whether it's by your company or by the industry as a whole, kind of forces you to do something to bring that people back, those people back to you again, which, again, is your number ones.
But as we're seeing, even with a heavy promotional push for Damage and Silencer, not good numbers for DC.
Nope, because it's not Superman or Batman.
They've had other titles that can launch higher than that.
Yes.
And to say this is the new age of DC, I'm wondering if that is a reflection of the new age of DC, you know what I mean? And not in a good way.
But it's hard to say these did badly, not because I'm going to say they did well either. Well, I'm not a grammar person.
Me no words.
Exactly. I'm a number guy.
But they're ranks 44 and 65. I mean, they didn't do badly compared to the rest of the list.
And we have next to nothing to compare them to. What other characters have been launched and done any better at one of the big two in the last, I don't know, decade?
Good question. I'd have to go dig around on the first issues to be able to answer that.
Yeah,
but how many have also been billed as the new age of DC? You know, I think they overhyped it and nobody bought. Literally.
To be fair, they didn't hype it that well. And again, I'm buying more and more trades and reading more and more things delayed and all these types of things. I had to ask you before we recorded what these are because I wasn't sure what they were. So the marketing behind this new age of DC heroes didn't work that well.
Well, I guess that's a difference between you not reading many new comics and me reading almost all DC has, and at the back of every one, there's a 2-page splash on this or whatever.
Which is funny because I've got most of the trades from the last 2-3 months, and I've either read them or at least flipped through them all, and I don't remember seeing a single ad for either of them.
I honestly have never, not getting the trades, I don't know how different the in-house ads are for the two.
They have none.
That would be a big difference.
One page, maybe, of, you know, and usually that one page is either just, here's a list of a bunch of trades, or, you know, if it's volume 4, there's a page showing volume 1, 2, and 3.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because house ads are one of the other promotional dollar spends. And there are certain... Well, I assume they've at least got to put the ad together or whatever and figure out what to put that on, whether it's a... I'm not saying it's a significant dollar amount.
Well,
I'm just saying...
Well, this goes back to something we talked about several years ago, and I used to bring up more, and I've kind of given up because no one cares. And at this point, it just kind of is the way it is. Is the proliferation of house ads because they're trying to market, or simply they've got a terrible ad sales team, or they've given up on ad sales and don't try to sell ads anymore?
I think getting sales of ads to outside companies when you're selling, you know, 30,000 units to the same couple of people.
Difficult.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, but either for whatever reason that it devolved from actually selling cars, video games, candy, whatever, to
Hostess Cupcakes,
other comics.
Yep.
It's that way now. And they've got a resource there that they're divvying up, and you can tell where they're kind of trying to direct people towards. Is it this new Nightwing storyline? Is it this new Age of Heroes stuff? Is it something else? And, you know, there are certain titles that just don't get mentioned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a finite resource, so it's a spend of some sort, whether it's actual, you know, money out of any budget or not, who knows?
Yeah.
But the question is, could that be spent more effectively or used more effectively at the very least? And I'm not sure, because I think part of it is that is literally preaching to the choir, and that's a cross-sell strategy. You've got somebody who has bought a title. You're trying to cross-sell them onto other titles. I would be tempted to have the stuff be in each comic a little bit more specific to the comic than maybe it is. And it's like, oh, you're reading X-Men Blue. You know, there's X-Men Gold. There's Uncanny X-Men, or, you know, or actually, I guess it's Astonishing X-Men these days, or whatever the current crop of colors are for the X-Books. And you could argue maybe that'd be a good strategy because you're selling them to like stuff.
Yeah.
You could argue maybe it's not a good strategy because if they're reading one X-Book, they probably know about the others. I don't know what's the best strategy on that.
I know the big two don't get along and they're big corporations and all of that. I wonder if there would be an actual sales market in ads to smaller non... If I'm a DC sales guy, if I could get approval to do it, could I go to a guy like Terry Moore and try to sell an ad for his new book in...
You know what I would be tempted to
would
do?
Would that be more effective than just putting, you know, the 50th copy of House ad for, you know, whatever the big DC book they're pushing that month is in the next issue?
I would go to some of those creators if I could get the corporate hierarchy to do it. And obviously there'd be challenges there. But if I could make the decisions, I would go to some of those people like a Terry Moore or whomever and say, you've got this book you're doing. You could maybe benefit if we had a house ad and, you know, either Batman or whichever book, work it out with them. Tell you what, we'll put an ad in if you do a cover.
Yeah.
And by the way, you get to design your own ad. You know, we got to approve it, but you do all the work on that. So at that point, you've gotten a free cover. You've gotten a free house ad.
Yeah.
You've gotten good will, hopefully, with that creator. You know, if nothing else, because you've gotten them a little exposure or whatever. To me, that's a building bridges kind of a thing that benefits everybody.
Yeah.
And maybe you can even do a turnaround of, you know, hey, and here's an ad for one of our books to put in your book kind of a deal. Not that I expect, you know, people who are reading Strangers in Paradise or whatever to suddenly flock towards, you know, Batgirl or what have you. But there's a certain play nice with the others in the market that makes sense. But even so, you're still advertising to other comic fans. Now, on the one hand, that's smart because they're willing to buy comics.
Yes.
On the other hand, that's why the top 300 is always this, you know, 4.5 to 9.5 million units every month.
Yeah.
We're not really expanding the market. You know, we're shuffling stuff around.
Yep.
But if you could stop the shuffling and actually be building on top of it, but to your point, is that even doable? I guess naively optimistic and would like to think it is.
Oh, I'd love to think it is.
Even more love to have evidence to point to that says that it is, other than Walking Dead.
And not only that, I think it is possible. I really genuinely do believe it's possible. What I don't know, if there's a financially successful for the next quarter, the next year way to do it, which I think is kind of what I've been talking about mostly the last 45 minutes or whatever it's been, is even if it's doable, I'm not sure it's the financially best option to make it to the end of the next quarter or the next year or whatever.
And again, there's nothing to say you do it exclusively.
Exclusively, absolutely.
You just need to be phasing that in as you're hopefully able to phase other stuff out.
Yeah.
But if we look at marketing and stuff, which has been kind of a lot of what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
There's another aspect to be thinking about. In terms of comics, and I'm going to use DC as an example for this,
because
I think they're one of the easy ones to go do. You could argue, and I think you should be able to argue successfully, that the CW shows are a form of advertising for some of the DC properties.
Absolutely.
Now, we talked recently about the sales number, or not the sales numbers, the TV viewing numbers with your spreadsheet, where you do all the heavy lifting, which I love you doing. And I went ahead, and for my article, I took the average of the CW shows and their average rating for the 18 to 49 age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that was an average viewership of, I think, 822,072 people. Okay. Obviously, some episodes like the Crisis on Earth X did much better. Others, not so much. But on average, there's 750,000 people that have expressed interest in the DC Universe characters. If you could get some sort of transition from there into the DC comics that are related, in some cases, all you would need is a single percentage, which is, what, 8,220 people, that if they bought an issue of Green Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Black Lightning, you could bump the sales in a very measurable sense.
And again, I don't think comic readers are as narrowly focused as those ad numbers. I don't know if you looked at it. I do have the total viewers, which again represents everyone over the age of two that watches a show.
I'm going to argue the three-year-olds probably aren't buying many comics, but
yeah, but me and you, well, not quite me, and I don't think not quite you.
Not but quite me, but I'm getting close to getting pushed out of that range.
As we discussed on the Slack channel, the average age of, at least the Slack channel, of the people willing to divulge it is very near that same number me and you are at.
Yeah. My point is, and I think you're driving towards it too, there's more than that many people.
Yeah, what number did you come up with, by the way, for the average?
822,072 people between 18 and 49.
And the average total viewers age 3 or plus 2 plus is 1.9 million.
Again, I took it based on the average of the average ratings for the CW shows.
And I'm doing it on the average of the average total viewers.
Okay. Okay.
Just letting you know, because I do think, you know, there's 14 and 15 year olds that absolutely would buy a comic that aren't in that 18 to 40.
Oh, absolutely. And there's 50 plus people who would be interested.
Exactly.
So this is a low number.
Yes.
My point is 1% of that low number could have increased, say, this Black Lightning Cold Dead Hands issue by 91%.
Okay.
It could have bumped the Flash sales by about 17%, Supergirl by about 39%, Green Arrow by 35%.
Yep.
If 1% of the people on average watching picked up the comic. And
if you got a 0.5%, you'd be over a 10% increase in all of them.
Yeah, which is better than many variant covers do.
Yes.
So to me, the big problem is there's not really any call to action at the end of these shows, even pointing out, hey, they're based on comics. And guess what? Comics are still published.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they should buy a TV ad, whatever, but I mean, if they could contractually get a title card that just shows up for long enough to point out, hey, these things are available as comics too.
Well, they do. They get that DC logo thing, sort of.
They get the DC logo thing, but that's not a go buy a comic book.
Yeah, fair enough.
There is more time spent on Berlanti's studio thing bit at the end there for the few seconds it's up than any attempt to get people to say, you know what? I liked this Black Lightning character. Let me go check out a comic for, wow, it's $3.99, but it's Black Lightning. I'll check it out or whatever.
Or go, hey, log on to Amazon. There's a trade for $10, $15, yeah. $20, whatever.
So I think there's a much, much wider audience for comics, or at least for the property of the comics are publishing. Maybe there's not enough people who are into reading, don't feel they have the time, or whatever. I get it.
Yeah, I was going to say, we discussed that last time. There might be a reading problem, too. It's part of it.
But we don't need everybody. We don't even need a full percent.
No, exactly.
And again, that's of a subset of the viewers. It seems totally doable. It just hasn't been done. And, you know, when I look at a lot of these numbers on how the sales are just going down and down and down, I mean, Black Lightning Cold Dead Hands number 3 is at a little over 9,000 units out of a 6-issue series, I believe. Mm-hmm. That 6th issue, not going to be doing so hot.
And again, completely anecdotal, but a group of junior hires at our church, for instance, church camp, I was shocked hanging out at a church camp group with them, how many of them particularly watch the Flash television series? Mm-hmm. And how many of them own Flash sneakers, Flash t-shirts, Flash action figures? So again, the argument might be to the studio or to Warner Brothers or whoever kind of owns all this. Maybe they're getting that marketing, but it's more effective trying to get those people to buy a t-shirt or a sneaker or an action figure than it is to buy a comic book. Which, again, as a comic book fan, is a sad thing.
No, but I got lots of action figures, too, so I get it.
Yeah.
It just seems like the we're in such a better position now than we were 5-10 years ago, in terms of acceptance of the properties and availability of the stuff, both digitally and print. Granted, sometimes you got to go chase down where your comic store is or whatever, but again, you can get the trades on Amazon or in stock trades or, you know, wherever. Availability is not that hard if you've got somebody who's actually said, you know what, I should go check this out.
Yep.
And if shows like Smallville and others in the past were able to do the, hey, here's the soundtrack songs we played during the episode, go check out their album. That's all I'm saying they should be doing.
Yep. No, absolutely. But, and again, you just talked about tracking down your comic book store. That's the other thing. Those t-shirts we're talking about, those sneakers, those bath towels. Yeah, they're at Target. They're at Walmart. They're at Nordstrom's. They're, you know, whatever. Those comic books aren't, which is a whole different issue.
Well, and DC left the newsstand 5, 6, 7 months ago or whatever.
And again, leaving the new, what does that mean? They're no longer in Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
I think that's exactly what that... And at that point, they're already, they're still there because the trades are in Barnes and Noble. So they're probably, you're probably more likely to hook somebody and get more sales if they buy that trade that's on that aisle at Barnes and Noble than the guy wandering through the magazines is picking up the newsstand issue.
Well, particularly since I believe they were costing a dollar more to cover the returns.
Yeah, they were.
It priced itself out of the market.
Well, yeah. When you're looking at a 22-page comic and it's sitting next to, you know, a 300-page Cosmo sitting right next to it for the same price or, you know, whatever. I'm a musician. Guitar Player Magazine's $4.99. And it's like 180 pages. I'm much more likely going to buy that than that 23-page Batman.
There was a, and I forget which listener it was, posted a thread on the forum about if they were in charge of Marvel, here's what they would do. And one of their ideas was consolidate the titles, but have them be longer.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something to be said for having a format that, I mean, there's no particular reason we need to be locked into the 20 page out of a 32 page comic, format.
Nope.
You know, it's again, not like the other pages are getting necessarily paid for. Granted, you'd have to pay for content, but hell, do reprints of old material or something.
Well, and that's, it's funny. I was, today I happened to kind of be on a podcast and I was re-listening I was just out of podcast. So I happened to be listening to our year end again, because I hadn't listened to it yet and it was in my feed. And even though I recorded it, what the heck, I'll listen to it. And the second half, we were talking about the trades and we kind of got to that part where we were talking a little bit about manga and TJ was, you know, I've often wondered, because one of the things that was brought up is, well, why don't we go to an OGN? And you were talking about story momentum and all this stuff. What about if the companies like Marvel and DC, let's say a company like DC, all the Gotham books, you put them in a big volume, kind of like the Shonen Jumps, on lower quality newsprint, and you put one of those out a month of, you know, hey, here's what's going on in Batman's world. And basically be the issue of Detective, you know. And then every 6 months, sure, the trades come out of the individual titles.
Did you ever read much from CrossGen?
Absolutely. I read almost all of it in the original day, and I read Ruse when they restarted a few years ago, and that lasted like 3 issues.
Back when it was CrossGen, the company, not just the imprint.
Yep.
One of the things they did later on was the Edge, Forge, and I forget what the other two were called. But they did trades that were kind of sort of what you were suggesting.
Yes.
It was basically, here's a smattering of our sci-fi stuff in a single thing. Here's a smattering of our more fantasy-based stuff.
Yep.
Trying to do somewhere between kind of that manga phone book style and a traditional trade.
Yep.
And those, they did okay. I think the idea is sound. It's a matter of, like you said, kicking the price point down by doing a cheaper printing, etc. The question is, does current art look good on cheaper printing? And not always. But that's the sort of an outreach kind of a deal you could do. The problem is, if you don't have enough story momentum in a single issue, if you don't have enough kind of perceived return on the investment, if you feel like you're getting teasers versus substantive chapters of a story, there's not something to pull you to that next thing.
Yeah. Well, and again, if you put out one of those, you know, a week or so, or, you know, every other week or, you know, where there is, you know, most magazines are monthly and they have multiple columns in them and you just kind of, you know, get you know, again, I happen to be a musician. I read Guitar Player Magazine. You know, so-and-so does a column and, you know, 1 month you will get, you know, working on the diminished scale, part one. Mm-hmm. Then you get part two the next month, part three the next month.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a weird thing in magazines.
But if the first part is just telling you, listing off what the other parts are going to be or something.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different problem.
You know, it comes down to, you got to have a satisfying amount, whatever that may be.
Yes.
And that can be done in a couple of pages fairly easily. Or maybe not easily, but it can be done. We've seen that in the past with backup features. It's just, like I said, there's a bigger audience out there. Whether they're there to be had or not is really the question.
Yeah.
Because, again, I know a lot of people who are watching some of these shows, certainly checking out the movies. I've got a coworker who's, oh, you've got to go see Black Lightning when it first comes out. It's going to be big, going to be great, or whatever. This is not somebody I expect to ever read any of the Black Panther titles coming out right now.
Oh, Black Panther, okay.
You know?
You switched between Lightning and Panther halfway through, so I wasn't sure what you were talking
about. My apologies. This particular coworker was talking more about the Black Panther movie, but I've got others that watch some of the TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect most of them to become comic book readers. But again, there's such an acceptance of this material that we can't kind of hide behind the, well, it's comics, nobody reads comics.
Yeah.
Because we seem stupid or something. No, it's, people think it's cool now. And I swear, every time I turn around, I see an announcement for another TV show, another movie, or something like that.
Yeah.
Either getting greenlit or getting released or what have you. It's crazy. It's awesome. It's hard to keep up.
That it is.
And I think that's one of the other things that's a challenge for these comics these days is, again, with the X-Men titles, when you've got all of them kind of clustering around that, let me expand this chart, take a look, 30 to 40,000 range by and large, do you get Astonishing? Do you get X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold, Weapon X? What's the difference? Why are there so many? The paradox of choice kind of kicks in, and I think it almost, I don't want to say engenders an exhaustion or whatever, but geez, does it got to be so complicated? And then, geez, why are there so many issues?
I wonder if there's really that many readers or not.
I'm looking at these numbers and I'm saying not.
Okay, well, okay. Let me try to figure out. Let me bring it up and look at it a little closer and try to. Go ahead and talk about something else while I try to consolidate how I want to say this.
I'm going
to
suggest there's maybe 100,000 kind of casual fans that are going to gravitate towards things like a Walking Dead or a Batman or the more successful titles. And there is a smaller number, potentially 15 to 30,000 more hardcore fans that are getting a lot of the different comics out there. And obviously different people at different levels in between. But that's why we're seeing a lot of titles that are struggling because they're selling mainly to the deeply entrenched, such as myself, and other titles that are doing pretty well because, oh, it seems like a big deal. Everybody's flocking to it. It's
okay. Well, you were talking about X-Men Blue and Gold,
mm-hmm.
and how they all kind of congregate in the mid 30,000s.
Yes.
Essentially. So I guess my question is, and I, again, without a lot of data, we will never know this. Does that represent, let's call the average 35,000. Does that represent 35,000 people that buy both, 30,000 people that buy both, and 5,000 that buy one of each, or 5,000 that buy both and 30,000 that buy one of each? My guess is it's much closer to the vast majority buy both, and there's a small number that buy only one.
With the numbers this close, it's hard to tell. I was often surprised when you would have a book or a franchise.
We talked about that, like Batman or Green Lantern, where one would sell 80,000, one would sell 40,000, you know, well, okay, or all the rest of them.
Even when you had a story that was crossing between them and people wouldn't get all the chapters of the story.
Yeah.
So you've got some that are just, it's a crossover, I may get the issue, I may skip it, whatever.
Yeah.
I think there's got to be a certain contingent, a larger contingent getting both than there is of just getting one.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I would think either as creators move around or characters move around, we would see more of a migration.
Or you'd see one float to the top being, you know, you'd see the better one, whatever that means, float to the top.
Or the more popular one. If you're reading Astonishing X-Men because it has Nightcrawler, but, oh, wait, he's moving to red, I'll move to red.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem to happen that way.
On the other hand, it does appear that gold is a little more popular than blue.
It does.
Not much.
Not
gold
by much.
Gold averages about 36,000. Blue averages around 33,000. So it's a little bit, but not a huge. But again, is that difference 10,000 people that each read one, or is it, you know, 30,000 people that each read one? And I tend to think it's closer to the vast majority read both, and that small fluctuation's a, you know, less than a third that read one or the other.
Both of those X-Men Blue and Gold launched around the 120,000 mark.
Yep.
So again, there's that attrition. If they had launched closer to that 60,000 and stayed roughly even, they'd be doing much better off. It's just one of those things that
arguing they were going to be at 35 anyways. So the argument that they'd launch at 60, I don't think is possible. They either launch at 120 and get to 35, or they launch at 35 and stay at 35. So you might as well take the launch at 120.
Yeah, I guess it's just you're getting the cash infusion that month, and if you rotate it around the titles over the year, and you've always got this cash infusion from the covers, you get it. But
yeah,
it just, I am risk averse by nature, and that just seems like something that if the bubble bursts, it bursts fast and hard.
Absolutely, it does. But it bursts slower than not doing it and just sticking at 20,000 forever.
True, true. I mean, it works. It's just, I would like to think if they could figure out what makes comics sell, and I'm not suggesting that's a simple question to answer, but certainly at Marvel and DC, it would behoove them to have a better sense of it and therefore have a better batting average.
But again, I tend to think alternatives are a large part of it. And if you can't stop the other publisher from constantly putting out alternatives or alternative number ones or jumping on points or whatever you want to call them, your only alternative is to fight back with your own. So again, if I'm going to drop two things and pick up two new things, I better have something in the pool of potential things to pick up, because otherwise I'm only in the pool of things to drop.
This all starts to get into almost a game theory kind of a thing of, do you think it's a zero-sum game or not?
Yeah.
And what strategy do you think the readers are using of, do they have a finite amount of resources, be it time, slots on their lists, money, whatever? And if so, what is that? And then are you crowding one of your own books out or crowding somebody else's book out? That engenders different strategies.
Yeah.
If you think you're more likely to get one of your books onto the list at the expense of somebody else's title getting off than of one of your own titles getting off, and you're not cannibalizing your sales, certainly publishing more makes sense. And if you've got a character that is successful, of course, why not try to get him into another title? That should be successful. It's just there comes a point where when there's two, maybe when there's four, not so much.
Well, and we've talked about this in the past, and we haven't really seen it. We've seen it to a degree with just kind of the general trends down. You know, how many Batman books are too many? How many X-Men books are too many? How many Avengers books are too many? But to go to a much easier example to at least see the trend of a couple of years ago, remember Green Hornet, Dynamite?
Yeah.
And how quickly they went from one to like 10, and how quickly those sales eroded on all 10 of them.
Yeah, they strip mined the property.
Yeah.
I think they've got another title coming back out now, but they've had to let it cool off for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no easy answers to this stuff. But when so many of the books are selling, you know, 20,000-30,000 or something, that means your average store is getting, you know, 10 copies maybe. Yeah. Obviously, there are Midtown and others that are getting a bunch more. So the average for the typical stores is even less.
Yeah.
And that, again, goes to that collectability aspect. If we filter out Marvel and DC...
Yeah, let's see what else. And as I did point out earlier, if you do that, you're left with one book in the top 100.
One book in the top 100, and only 112 books in the top, 300, yeah. Let's go ahead and undo that filter so I can see the full. See, we had two issues of Spawn. It's selling an average of 19,100 or so. At one point, it was neck and neck with Walking Dead. Obviously, not the case anymore.
Well, at one point, it was head and shoulders past The Walking Dead.
True. And then The Walking Dead caught up and kept going.
Yes.
Again, whoever can figure out that secret, if it's reproducible.
Yeah, which, again, I think is one of the big...
Even if it was a once-in-a-decade thing, we should have hit it again by now.
Also true. It's been a while.
I mean, the title's been out for, like, 15 years now. And just through dumb luck, nobody else has stumbled across that kind of success. For this length.
The one we always hear about is Saga, which doesn't appear to be on this list this year, this month.
Even if you take out the increasing sales aspect of Walking Dead, and suppose it had just stayed at a sustainable level, 175 issues.
Yeah.
There are very few other comics at those numbers.
Yep.
More now that we've gone back to Legacy, but still.
Well, and again, once you forget Legacy and forget, you know, you look at this list of the independent publishers who, you know, there's Spawn in the 280s.
Yeah.
There's G.I. Joe in almost at 250. There's Simpsons almost at 250. And that's kind of the list of things in the triple digits.
There's one further down below the top 300, but
yeah, it's Walt Disney comics by American. Yeah, but that's almost a legacy thing because American Mythology.
That's actually IDW.
Whatever. Point is, IDW hasn't published 740 previous issues in the last 740 months.
No, and it's bounced between multiple publishers, and a lot of it is overseas material getting translated and printed. It's a unique thing.
Yeah. But yeah, Simpsons, Spawn, G.I. Joe. I mean, that's kind of the list. There might be one or two others that happen to not have something this month, but there's not a lot.
Going way down towards the 500 rank range, a couple of the items I'm getting, again, I think I've got a noticeable percentage of the run. Like Dan Dare, I've got one copy out of the 999 copies that sold.
Yes.
But if it's profitable for Titan to do, and maybe they're doing much better over in the UK market that's not included here, a lot of these are just ones that you would have a hard time finding at your average store simply because they've sold fewer copies than there are stores out there. Eric was saying, what, roughly 3,000 stores?
Well, yeah.
So Elephant Man, which ended with issue 80, did a little over 1,500 units.
Yes, it did.
And that one's been around for a while. It's got a history, a known quantity or whatever. And again, half the stores didn't get it.
I haven't read that book religiously. It's actually, the ones I've read, I've enjoyed. It's not a bad book.
Elephant, no, it's a great book. The art sometimes absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And it's got a solid story. It's just one that, you know, it didn't hit a huge audience or whatever, although Star King seems to do well at conventions and whatnot, like when I've seen him at San Diego, so.
I've got to ask, is this an issue with your system, or is this a reprint, or what? Rank 202. Witchblade number 2, 8,445 units. It's Witchblade 99. I'm assuming this is a new volume, or is it a reprint of the old volume?
It's a new volume, and I didn't catch that one on my my system.
Fair enough.
The way my system works is I've got a list of title runs that I maintain by hand.
Yeah.
And whenever a new volume comes out, I try to catch it and say, oh, is this correct or whatnot? And I need to kind of enhance that process to say if I've already gotten with 95, this would have been old enough, I wouldn't have had number 2 of it. If I've already got an issue of that title in here, maybe it's a new volume.
Yeah.
I
just wasn't sure. But now that I'm reading the solicit, no, this is still Alex.
Yeah, this is the new stuff.
Yeah.
You can tell also from the order code of November.
Well, I mean, if it was a reprint, wouldn't it still have a current order code?
It would have had a current order code, but it would have had some indication that it was a reprint.
Okay. This is where you know more about that stuff than I do, because the order codes, I might as well hide that column, because I don't know what they mean.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I realize it's a catalog number in a month, but other than that, I don't know enough to know what they mean as far as...
But it's surprising how helpful just having that year and month of the solicitation is. Because I use that in combination with the item description, which is what you have over in column AC of the spreadsheet.
Yep.
Between the two, that's how I should be able to differentiate which volume of which blade it was.
Yeah.
But to do that, I've got to be letting my system know which volume of which blades there are. And that's non-trivial.
Yes. Also, I do find it interesting that that same book, it seems to think there's been 841 weeks since the last one, which would indicate that does go back to the original number one.
Yeah. Like I said, I need to clean that up. It's one of the things I did at the end of the year, beginning of the year time frame was a deep dive on cleaning a lot of stuff up and just trying to get all of these volumes and try to get, because one thing you may not have noticed, and certainly listeners haven't because they can't see the spreadsheet, is the first ship date, I've actually got it fully filled out for the top 300. That took a little bit of doing, because that's not just cleaning up the top 300 sales lists, but now it's a matter of going back to the shipping list and cleaning up all the variants, all the second printings, all those things,
yep,
to where it gets that correct first issue there.
Which leads me to another one. Again, it might just be an anomaly of the spreadsheet. Rank 253, Rumble from Image Comics, number 2. A, it's listed as a reorder. Is that correct?
I believe it is correct.
Has it really been over 3 years since issue 1 came out at 161 weeks? And again, an Image, that's always possible. I'm not familiar with the series in the least, obviously, as this discussion is indicating.
I think this is actually a second volume.
Okay.
I'm seeing a 1 through 15, and then I'm seeing a number 1 and a number 2.
Okay.
And there.
So this is not reorder. This is first issue sales of volume 2, number 2.
That's what I'm going to guess based on it having a different price.
Okay.
Not having read the book, and that's one of the things that really...
helps.
Well, it eats my lunch on some of these books that I don't read. It's,
yeah.
For Marvel or DC, I can say, oh, well, yeah, that's a new volume, and I know, did that launch in December? Did that launch in January? You know, how's it doing or whatever? But for some of these, it's like, I'm doing good to know that that's an Image book.
Yeah. No, and
yeah.
And again, at places like Image... It wouldn't be unheard of that there would be several years between the first and second issue. That has happened before.
Yes. Well, and sometimes titles will flip between publishers or whatnot, and
yep,
it's just tracking some of this down is not easy.
Yeah.
And one of the tasks I'm thinking about undertaking is going back through the 15 years worth of stuff I've got and cleaning all that data up. Because if I can get that data fully cleaned for the last 15 years, and some of it's better than others based on just how much time I had at the month it came out, that allows me to do better longer-term analysis. But one of the things that I think separates what I do from what Milton does over at ICV2, which is a great source of sales information, and also what John Jackson Miller does over at Comic-Con, which is another great source of sales information, probably the go-to place, I would say, is I've actually gotten it to where I can do issue-to-issue comparisons, whereas they're just kind of, here's what the list is every month. But to do those issue-to-issue things, I've got to equate that these are indeed the same title, and sometimes I just get it wrong.
And every once in a while, it's fun to look at things that are just egregiously. And I would call 15 weeks egregious. And we do not have a trivial number of them.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point again where lateness is cropping up more than I think it probably should.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it may be unavoidable, but that's more the exception than the rule, and it can kill story momentum.
Well, and again, I'm looking at some of these, and there's books. There's only one in the top 300 that is that late, and that is Southern Bastards number 19. Which was 43 weeks late, only 18 weeks since the last issue, but apparently 43 weeks after its original expected ship, which was March of last year.
And the expected ship date is...
from the first solicit, I would assume. It's got an order code of January 17.
It's from the current solicitation.
Okay.
If they cancel and resolicit, that kind of resets the clock.
Gotcha.
But the other thing that happens is they can update that expected ship date.
Okay.
And it's like they did it for Invincible 144. They've done it for Dark Knight Metal issues, Doomsday Clock, stuff like that. And I remember at one point, I think it was at a convention where Bob Wayne took some issues of, somebody claiming something was late. It's like, well, we said it would come out on date X and it came out on date X. It may have been not a month after the previous issue, but it came out when we said it did, ergo not late.
Yeah.
And there's a rationale and a rhyme and a reason to that, which I get. But there's also, when you keep sliding the release date, it's like, come on. I'm going to see what I can do about loading in information on these things shifting to where for some of these things that are later than they should have been, how many times did it slide? How long did it slide? You know, if it's one thing if it slid once, but if it slid two or three more times, it's like, come on, guys.
Well, again, sliding once for a week or two is one thing. Sliding, you know, even if it slides three times and it's 1 week each time, okay. That's entirely different than sliding once and sliding 6 months.
Yeah. And to me, a week late is not a big deal.
Exactly.
That literally could be as simple as you got stuck at a traffic light, the guy driving the truck to the distributor, and it didn't quite make the cutoff time or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not likely that it happens, but it's conceivable. And, you know, I'm willing to...
And it's winter time. I mean, weather alone probably creates some issues.
Yes.
For, you know, the 1 or 2 week things.
Absolutely. If it's and we've had some major storms this winter and stuff, so getting something from the printer to the distributor and stuff like that easily can have some slowdowns. And I'd rather it be delayed a week than have some driver do something crazy and, you know, get killed or some such. Drive safely by all means. But there are other times where if it's delayed, and like I believe Eric was suggesting on the forum or saying flat out that the New Age of Heroes stuff was delayed a little bit at retailer requests, because there were a lot of other new things coming out at that time. It's like, let's spread the risk a little in time. Okay, that makes sense. But then there's a matter of, you know, once a book comes out, if it's, again, like Doomsday Clock, they're going bi-monthly for a 12-issue monthly series that was an event thing, and now it's going to last, you know, another...
2 years.
2 years, yeah. That's crazy. Something's not right with that, scheduling-wise. And I would like to see them do better on those sorts of problems.
Well, did the... I know it's been a couple of years since this started. Did that newish Sandman series ever complete?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Okay. But again, it was supposed to be monthly for 6 months, and it was 2 or 3 years before all of it came out.
A year and a half, maybe. I don't know that it went quite as long as you're thinking. I could be wrong, though. It took forever.
It was nowhere near the, oh yeah, it's going to be over in 4 or 5 months that we originally thought, though, either.
Yeah, yeah. They could have done much better on that, and frankly, I think they should have done much better on that. And again, stuff comes up, I get it, but they've been publishing comics for a while. They should know how to do the scheduling a little bit tighter. And if you've got something that delays everything, okay, push it back or whatever, but to suddenly have just seemingly interminable delays... issue after issue or something, just like happened on Silver Surfer with Dan Slott over at Marvel and some others. It as a reader, it drives me nuts. You know, when the S.H.I.E.L.D. series, I think it was, over at Archie, was solicited, got delayed. It's like, you shouldn't have solicited until you knew the book was ready to go out. Again, it's a cash flow issue, though. Can you hang on to it, sit on it for the couple of months to make that happen?
Yeah.
Not easy, but the other, otherwise you risk it's late. And there have been publishers where everything runs on time until they don't.
Well, as we were talking about, there's a bunch of delayed stuff that got announced today as we record the 15th of February by DC. And so, yeah, it's DC has been amazingly on time since Rebirth. But all of a sudden, that's not as true.
Yeah, it was Metal, Doomsday, Dead Man... and
Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Oh, the part that gets me with Doom Patrol is
Doom Patrol's been late since day one.
Yeah, but that final 11 and 12, if and when they come out, I think lead into the JLA Doom Patrol special, which is here at rank 91.
And you and Drew reviewed a couple weeks ago. I mean, you were talking about at the time how you thought it was, like, I think this happens after the series I haven't gotten the end of yet.
Yeah.
And now that ending is delayed.
I think I know story points that have to happen in 11 and 12 based on what I've read. And that's stealing your own thunder at that point. That's just, that doesn't seem like it could remotely be good for sales. But it's what happens. So anything else look interesting?
I was trying to take a quick look. You want to take a look at some of the price points and things that we normally look at?
$3.99, 76% of the top 300, 75% of the top 500. $2.99 is hanging in there, but it's only accounting for about 13% of the top 300 and only 9.8% of the top 500.
Well, it's 41 things at $2.99. There are 29 things at over $3.99.
Yeah.
So there's almost as many more than $3.99 as there are less than.
Well, and there was pushback against 399 for a while, but that's pretty much gone. And if and when DC decides to raise the price on a couple of books, and I hope they won't, but eventually they will. They can't keep it up forever, and nor should we expect them to. But I think the price is also not why they're selling better, but it's certainly helping them sell better. If you can, again, you've got that slot on your pull list. You want to fill it with a $3.99 book or a $2.99 book. All other things being equal, you may go $2.99. All other things aren't equal, so that factors in as well.
Yeah, and expanding that out to the top 500, we have 62 items over $4. While we have only 50 items below $3.99.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's not going to change anytime soon, apparently.
One of the things I did differently this time on the spreadsheet is I've got the reorders and more and less than type stuff, both for the top 300 and for the full list.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's interesting is for the top 300, only 31 items sold more than the previous issue, as far as my system could determine.
Yep.
Whereas for the top 500, only 35 issues sold more.
Yep.
So adding 200 items to the list meant four things sold more than, you know what I mean? It's just, stable would be amazing, and upward sales would be nice.
We did, however, add almost 50 reorder items. So, like, when we do the yearly comic spotlight and you have all those kind of unreported units, when you get 500, all of a sudden they don't become unreported. So there are a bunch of reordered things just below the top 300.
Well, again, you've got something like Superman number 37. It did 925 units of reorder activity.
Yep.
And that's well below the top 300, but just within the top 500. Now, it's not going to do that each and every month, but it does add up.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the Batman Creatures of the Night number 2 reorder activity for 914 units that got added to the list when they consolidated the two entries for Avengers 678.
Yep.
So, again, it added less than 1,000 units to kind of correct that minor clerical error, which really doesn't make a hill of beans worth of difference in the total.
No.
It's noise at that point. So even if we had the full list, the percentages of the breakdown I don't think would change much.
I tend to agree.
At least for Marvel and DC, it would add some other publishers, and theirs would change substantially from not being there to being there.
Yeah, but even, yes, they would go from not being there to being 0.005% instead of not being there.
Yeah, I think if the list went further, if I had that the monthly breakdown for the full list, I'd have to add a few decimal points.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are a couple of publishers down here at the bottom that, like Lions Forge and whatnot, that may not have been in the monthly breakdown at all. And just trying to figure out what their percentage would be probably well under the two decimal places I have the other sheet go to.
Well, and it's funny because on the overall kind of the market share list, you do list 20 producers of things. And then you have everyone else. And the everyone else does account for, a little over, not quite 2.5% of the total market.
That's the market share that Diamond provides.
Yes, and that is everything, not just comics.
Yeah, but it also just shows that, when you've got publishers doing 2-point-something million units, and then you've got some publishers coming out with a couple of titles that are doing maybe under 1,000 units or something.
Yeah.
They're playing in a different ballgame. Totally different sets of scale. Not better, not worse. And I think there's a lot these smaller publishers can and do for the industry, but it's just they have to operate differently.
Well, yeah. And again, it, like you said, it's not a matter of better or worse, but it's different. And we see it in all kinds of industries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are small independent films that are straight to video. They're not competing with the summer blockbuster. They're just not. They're making a different product.
Yeah. And they're potentially serving a different part of the audience or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, there's something to be said for some of these publishers that are doing more niche things that people may be very passionate about, and it helps fill out their pull list, keeps them going as they're waiting for some other delayed book or what have you.
Yeah.
It's something that I think both sides can feed into the other from the top end of the spectrum and the bottom end of the sales spectrum. So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I think I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.